Continuing with chapter 37. They had finished the castle. And I'm really, really, really hoping that the minute we're free, we start delving into the true history of World War II. Look at that quote unquote cleanup operation Power did on us. What did Miklos just tell us? Tens of thousands, 40,000 Spanish Republicans slaughtered there, along with the Jews of Europe. Look at the freedom-loving folk who died in that war. Look who benefits. The result could be the intention. Continuing with Miklos Nisley's chapter 37, they had finished the castle at the price of unbelievable suffering, but they had never lived to occupy it. In the midst of this great mass of stone and concrete, they had all perished, like the slaves in ancient Egypt. The camp had not remained unoccupied for very long, however. Thousands who had fought in the Yugoslav underground, as well as members of all the various resistance movements throughout Europe, plus, of course, Europe's doomed race, the Jews, had flocked here by the tens of thousands, filling the fortress's barracks in a matter of days. There they had lived during the brief period preceding their deaths. Now another convoy, ours, decimated by the long trip and the insufferable cold, slowly wended its way up the arduous, snow-covered mountain path. Our strength was all but gone. We at last entered the gates of the Katzet and lined up in the gathering dusk on the Appelplatz. I looked around for my companions. Fischer, the lab assistant, was missing. I hadn't seen him since Plessau. Then he had been lying in the snow, his strength completely spent. From his contracted facial expression, I had suspected that his end was near. He was 55 and had spent 5 years in the Katzet, so it was not surprising that his organism had been unequal to the long walk and paralyzing cold. Dr. Korner was in pretty good shape, but Dr. Gorout, on the other hand, was in a critical condition. His mental troubles had steadily worsened, and even in the days of the crematorium, keeping his condition a secret had been a source of constant worry to me. I had done all I could to make sure he never ran into Dr. Mengele. Moosfeld had also been dangerous. If either one had noticed his condition, his life would not have been worth a penny. Before leaving the crematorium, he had already informed me of his last wishes. "Nicholas," he had said, "you are a strong-willed person, and one day you'll manage to get out of all this alive. As for me, I know I'm finished." I had tried to protest, but he had waved my words of encouragement aside and gone on. "I have proof that my wife and daughter died in the gas chamber. But I left my 12-year-old son with the monks of the Kozeg Cloister. If you ever do get home, fetch him and bring him up as your own. I say this in full possession of all my faculties, knowing I haven't long to live." I had promised him that I would faithfully carry out his wishes in the event I escaped, and he did not. Now, happily, we had left the site of certain death far behind. To die now, so near to the end of the road, just when the hope of freedom had filled our hearts would be truly tragic. And next week we will finish chapter 37 of Miklos Niezli's Auschwitz, a doctor's eyewitness account. And my plan is to conclude Miklos Niezli's Auschwitz, a doctor's eyewitness account, then next week. He's been with us for some months now. I'm gonna miss you, Miklos. So until next week, peace.